Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk podcast. We help you build a thriving creative practice. I'm your host, Andy J.
Pizza.
And that threw me off. You can follow along to Creative Pep Talk stuff on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into today's episode. This episode is supported by In the Making, an original podcast brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. If you are trying to boost the YouTube, TikTok, Reels content side of what you're doing, one episode of In the Making that I think will be super useful to you is their episode with John Yushai. I think John's method for including his audience in the process is really inspiring. And if you want to hear about that and more about leveling up your game in the creator economy, just search In the Making in your podcast player to listen. Many thanks to In the Making and Adobe Express for their support. I really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it, got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. Short little pre-intro. This episode is an interview with Noah Camp, a friend of mine and a designer who is on the roster of my new artist management agency called Coloop. Noah makes 3D calligraphy and 3D illustration that is absolutely gorgeous. But this episode is about that and so much more. It's about finding yourself and becoming a pioneer and representing people like you, even when it's hard. On this podcast, almost on a weekly basis, we talk about how things don't get interesting until you break from the pack, until you disobey your heroes and go your own way. This episode is going to help you find the strength and the ideas that will help you find where you can do that for yourself. I am so grateful to Noah. But before we get to the interview, I'm going to go to a chat I had with my co-founder of Coloop, Ryan Appleton, and we're going to talk a little bit about how Noah embodies one of our core values. And I think there's a lot of passion, and I think Ryan and I were getting fired up talking about some of these ideas, and I think there's going to be some great takeaways even just from the little intro. All right, here's Ryan. Ryan, how are you doing, man?
Andy, I'm doing fine.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
How about yourself?
Another Coloop intro. I've been pumped to share this one since we recorded it. This is the good stuff. This is the
creative journey
in its most legit form, if you know what I mean. Do you?
Yeah.
I don't mean any particular thing. I don't know.
I think I'm picking up the innuendo. I think I know what you mean. Yeah, I mean, we'll get into who this interview is with. I think the creative journey is really important to this conversation. I think it really kind of goes through beginning, middle, and end, what's important about the process. And I guess inevitably that there is no end. It is a journey, and there's always the next unknown.
Yep, exactly. So do you want to drop the launch the rocket? Who is it? Who we got today?
Today's interview is with, drumroll, Noah Camp.
Noah Camp is a 3D artist and calligrapher, letterer extraordinaire. If you don't know his work, go find his work on Instagram at Noah Camp. Design.com. Not .com. That doesn't mean anything. We'll put it in the show notes. Noah's work is incredible. It is next level 3D stuff. Freaking love the stuff that he's putting out. Super thrilled to have him on our roster. And I think, you know, every one of these Co-Loop episodes, we wanted to tease out another foundational core value of our artist management agency, Co-Loop, and how each artist embodies these things in their own way. And the one that we wanted to highlight today was this idea of artist first. So with Co-Loop, when you think of the agency, we don't want you to think of our word mark necessarily, or, you know, our fancy website or whatever it is. We want you to think of the artists. We want them to be the face of this entity. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure I've talked about it on the podcast before, but it really goes back also to that idea of like Co-Loop's intention. My intention as an agent, is always to be the extension of the artist studio, right? It's putting the artist first, their work first, their career and their business first. And so as an agency, when we were distilling those core values, that was obviously one of those kind of foundational bricks that we were building this entire thing on, making sure the artist is always first and foremost the important, pillar, that billboard for what we're doing.
Exactly that. So every other experience that I had had with agencies in the past, I had always felt like I was coming into their umbrella. And we wanted to just flip that around because we wanted to be an extension of what they're doing. We wanted to come under their umbrella and be part of their team helping, because they're all capable. They're all these creative heroes on their own journeys doing these amazing things. We don't need to pull them under our fold. We want to be part of their fold, helping them go on their journey and meet their goals and slay their dragons. And so that gets to this idea of giving what you didn't get with this agency. This is the agency we wanted to build that I wish I had got signed on to 10 years ago. And I probably spent a decade complaining about, why doesn't the agency do this? Why don't agencies do that for artists? And I'm reminded of the James Murphy quote, which I think is a summary of a Michelangelo quote, which is, you know, instead of complaining, create to be your complaint, to be your critique. The thing you make is by its nature, a critique of what already exists. And this whole entity, Co-Loop, to me is trying to give what we didn't get, what artists aren't getting right now. And it's my way of, instead of complaining, create the thing I wish I had. And I think there's just this thing of, we get bitter in the complaints. Like there's a part of you that's like, why can't this thing come save me? Why do I have to pioneer it? But the hero is born when you take that mantle upon yourself. And in this episode, we hear Noah go through this. For his whole career, he wished that there was more representation with people who are trans. There are more representation for people in the creative community who are sober and have dealt with, addictions. And, you know, instead of sitting around and waiting for that representation to happen, he decided to embody it himself. And yeah, being a pioneer, it sucks. It's hard, but it can also be this beautiful thing. And I think you see that come through in this interview.
1000%. I think that's what's so impactful about Noah's story, the journey he went on. But everything you're describing, right, is the journey you and I went on for the better part of a decade to kind of finally arrive at what we need to do, putting our money where our mouth is, not let those complaints sour us, but instead do something about it, right, and kind of form Co-Loop as a result. But just going back to Noah's story, I think, you know, it comes through in the course of this interview, but he really talks about how this this process is absolutely necessary if you want to create something new. And I think he goes through this process. He talks about, you know, his time before he was, you know, a commercial artist, venturing into calligraphy, before finding, you know, illustration, becoming a 3D illustrator, you know, using 3D as his primary medium, but also kind of bravery to go into those uncharted territories, the uncomfortableness that it takes to be a pioneer is something kind of foundational to himself, coming out as a transgender person, coming out as sober, and channeling that all into his work helped him define himself.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it's it was an emotional conversation, and it's a powerful conversation. It's such a, I'm so glad we get the honor of getting to share it with everybody, and getting to share Noah's incredible work first and foremost on our platform and in our agency. So I'm just super thrilled. So let's get to it, shall we? Any other final notes?
Nothing at all. Let's get to it. I'm really excited for the world to hear Noah's insight, Noah's story.
Me too. Let's do it. You were saying that were you crazy about music?
Yeah.
You still are?
Yeah. I grew up singing, and that's where I got like a lot of, you know, attention. Mm-hmm. I got the solos and everything. So, you know, I love singing.
You liked that attention?
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't? I like trophies.
Some people don't.
Attention.
I mean, love attention more than you should.
I think I liked it as a kid. I do not like it now. But one thing I discovered was that, you know, I had a lot of trophies and a lot of, you know, a lot of accolades and a lot of praise for singing and trophies for sports.
Yeah.
And I'm just like diving right in.
Go. Please
as an adult, you don't get trophies anymore.
Yeah.
So I think I had like trophy withdrawal, like award withdrawal. But I was like, wait, where are the trophies?
I feel ya. Man, that's legit. I mean, I didn't get any trophies when I was a kid, but I think my whole life has been trophy withdrawal. Actually, my main trophy that I had growing up all the way until middle school was I won a baby contest, first place.
A baby contest.
It's the only first place I ever had. And that was it. I did get most improved in every sport that I ever played, mainly because I sucked and got a little bit better. But yeah, so let's get back to this. So you grew up doing sports and my mom put me in a baby contest at like a fair or something. I'm told that I was told it's legend in the Miller household that I was wearing a sailor outfit for some reason. I went down the runway. I guess there was a runway and I took off my sailor hat at the end almost as to say, hello, or what?
Ahoy.
Ahoy. That was exactly the word I was thinking of. And yeah. And that got it. I bagged it.
You know, I can just tell you deserved it.
I did deserve 100%. It. And it was everything's been worse off since. But so you sports and music? What sports?
Yeah. Basketball. I ended up on field hockey in high school. I did track. I did basketball. I did soccer. I did all the sports. I had four brothers. So
yeah.
But I like to play sports more than any of them.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, I really liked, I think I liked the attention of someone saying you're good at that.
Sure.
You know?
The affirmation of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally, when you said trophy withdrawal, in all seriousness, I feel like that's a real problem, especially when you're a freelancer or you're on your own and you're not, because here's the thing. I was thinking about this the other day. Like I like to think about, put myself into different industries to get some feet, like some perspective. So I'll think of like, if I was a musician and you take the spectrum of experimental to pop, where would I fall on that spectrum? Like, what am I shooting for? And I think, you know, unless you're shooting for leaning towards not necessarily experimental, but for the critics, you're not going to get any awards. And you might get, you know, Teen Choice Award or whatever, but you're not getting, you know what I mean? So like, I feel like in the, and then even in our smaller world of design and illustration, there are some awards, but they are for very particular types of people and work and credentials and social circles. Yeah. And I do think it becomes really hard to not get your affirmation from an external source.
Yeah. I mean, so many people are making art for followers, you know?
Right.
I mean, and it's so enticing. It's so addictive, you know, and it also is a lot of the advice that you hear is like, do what your followers want you to do, but you also have to balance that with what you love to do.
Absolutely. Let's dig on that for a minute, because there's a few different things going on there. One is, you know, I have friends that are in particular markets and niches that have very low follower count, and actually it in certain spaces that's an advantage, because now you're an unknown person, and in certain places that's like premium, you know. There's a time where anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but I just this your only external metric being your Instagram followers is definitely can be a real problem.
Yeah.
So let's go back to sports, music, what you were singing. What is all this about?
I was singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In bands or what?
No, I was singing, you know, choir, you know, classical singing. And then I went to college for singing. And singing education major, but you do like a line of performance, you know, you do have the vocal coaches and everything. And then you also teach, you learn how to, run a band and run, a choir, and you have to, you know, learn it all, because music departments are just completely, you know, cutting down, you know, budget cuts. So you have to learn it all, because you might be in charge of the whole music department for the whole school, even if they, you know, if they have one.
Right.
So that was, you know, that was a lot, and it was cool. I loved it, but didn't do it.
Why?
When I left.
What college. did you? Okay. So you went, your whole college experience was that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you get here?
I graduated and I moved to New York, and I decided after all of that, I wanted to be bored for the first time in my life.
And you wanted to be bored?
Yeah, I filled every second with, you know, sports and school and art and everything, you know, just so much. I was just constantly looking for achievement. And I think I had a realization without a realization, you know, subconscious, that I just wanted to relax for a minute. And I became a server in New York City, and
became a server.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I just started serving tables. And
why did you move to New York City?
Just because I wanted to.
Where were you before that?
I was in college. So I was at University of Hartford, Hart School of Music.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you went to New York City. How long were you there? Just
10 years. That? I had like 9 lives in New York.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
I think that's not uncommon.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So went to New York City. Well, I was bored for the first time. I filled that boredom pretty quickly with debauchery.
That's why they say idle hands, right? You're like, I'm bored. I got to do something around here. Yeah.
Trophy withdrawal. You know, let's fill it with something.
Debauchery. That word is so funny.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
So, I did a lot of odd jobs for a long time. And I was a 20-something-year-old. I was a typical 20-something-year-old in New York City.
Just doing the New York City thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you find your way to creativity, design? Do you consider yourself an illustrator or designer?
Illustrator. I'm using that more often now.
Seems like
through design. It's so funny how hard it was for me to say that I was a graphic designer. Like, I really had a hard time saying, like,
why?
Well, I'm not as good of a graphic designer as they are, so how can I call myself that? And to call myself an illustrator is actually quite, it's big for me. To even say I'm an illustrator, I say it took me so long to say I'm an artist. Oh my God. Like, there was such the associations with that word was just, everyone was an artist in New York City, but they weren't actually creating art, you know?
Yeah.
So I just was very, anti-artist for a long time. Not like the people, but calling myself that because I thought it was pretentious. I thought it was. So I'm an illustrator. I'm cool with that. I'm also cool with calling myself an artist, which is really amazing that I can say that.
What made you, because I'm curious about this. So because when I first got started, so I came from Indiana. And, you know, I know there are cultured places in Indiana, but I didn't come from a family that was cultured. I love my family. Why am I here? I'm wasting your time talking about how culture. I do love my family.
I can tell.
And they're not super into art, at least. I can say that, right? We moved a little bit and we got up more cultured over time. But I can't, you know, my parents came from blue collar Indiana, southern Indiana. And I just didn't have any, if you drew pictures, you were an artist. Like, that's it. I didn't go to any museums. I didn't have any of the baggage and it helped me. There's some problems with it, but early in my career, I feel like that kind of reckless abandon. I was like, yeah, I'm a designer. I'm an artist. I'm an illustrator. I'm whatever. I'm whatever I say I am. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, the world beat me up and I learned to be self-conscious and have all kinds of anxiety and crap like that. But why were you like struggling to call yourself any of these things?
I had the opposite problem.
Yeah.
You know, like you were just gung ho and, you know, you called yourself something before you even filled the role. And it's like, I'm such a perfectionist. I have to prove over and over and over that I'm something before I can label myself that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just low self-esteem pretty much.
Yeah.
You know,
I wonder, it's funny because I feel like maybe it's, there may be a part of that that's an expression of the same thing manifesting in two different ways.
Yeah.
Low self-esteem manifesting in claiming all these things or trying to skip to the end or, you know, not believing that, like trying to claim something. I think there's probably a bunch of other factors too, but did you grow up in a family that appreciated art?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It was really competitive even without. My mother always was nurturing creativity. She gave us a lot of free time. Like she didn't really know where we were, but we were being creative. And, you know, she really prided herself on being having creative kids. So we would get a lot of that, you know, accolades, praise for our creativity.
Yeah.
But there was it was a little bit critical, that I learned how to be perfectionist from my family, you know. I learned it also from, like, I know it was inherent within, it's probably in my DNA, but it was definitely it was definitely around me all the time, this perfectionism.
Let's dive into this. Do you feel like you've gotten better about not needing external affirmation for this stuff or not?
I think, again, like calling myself an illustrator, calling myself an artist, there's a lot of work behind that.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of work to be able to just say, to just be here.
Yeah.
You know, like it took so much for me to feel like I deserve to sit in this chair, you know, across from you, you know, like, and this is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, like,
hey, you deserve it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's just, I don't deserve things until I prove to myself that I do. I'm constantly walking through immense fear, just doing everything uncomfortable. Like everything makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I do it anyway, which is something I'm very proud of myself for. And I can't remember answers your question.
I don't know if it does, but I'm interested and I want to talk more about this because I feel, and I don't know what you experience. Is it anxiety?
Yeah.
A lot of artists, maybe more than ever, I don't know, maybe we're just more aware of it, are dealing with anxiety and depression and especially, I talk about this all the time on the show, this idea that, what do you call an artist that doesn't want to stand out? I don't know, but you don't call him an artist. And I know that it's a joke, but it's also like, how do you, like this idea of making art, there's this thing of, especially if you want to do it for a living, but for most people that are making art, it's not just a diary. It's some kind of attempt for human connection, connecting with somebody else. And to do that, you have to get some attention, right? And yet, myself included, I'm not gonna, it doesn't seem like I experience it to the level that you do, but they are struggling with breaking through this anxiety and getting themselves out there. What on a practical level has helped you do that? Could you just talk through us about the past couple years of however you, if I'm assuming that because you're out there a lot more, your work's out there, you're making projects, you're putting stuff online. I'm assuming that you feel like you've made some strides in that. I mean, you're here right now in my podcast room. It's so essential, as you know, to getting where you want to go. How have you done it?
Yeah, it's been an interesting road.
Yeah.
Like, I think it started with really just putting my work out there in the first place.
Yeah.
And, I really like what Sean West, said in his podcast that you iterate in public. And I mean, that was terrifying to
yeah.
me. Terrifying.
So true.
But the minute I followed his advice and I did that, I was getting the external validation,
yep.
you know, which is, it's unhealthy most of the time, but it was healthy in this case because it was like, hey, you have something, people like this thing you're making.
Yeah.
Like if people like something, you might be able to sell that thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's what it did for me. And I just continued to do it and I did it every day. And that really, you know, fought through the perfectionism. Because it was just like, all right, just get something out there.
Yeah.
And that was the first step to me really stepping over everything that was comfortable for me.
That's you know? Amazing. I love that. Iterate in public, this idea. This is what I call writing on stage. It's what comics do. To me, there's nothing more pure in creativity than the comics that are willing to be at the top and then start a new set that they know is bad. Like, I love it. When I watch these comics that are like talking about, I feel like Eddie Murphy's a great example of somebody who just recently did that again, but spent a long time. He was so praised as like comedy god and, you know, got out of the trenches because it's just too painful to iterate on stage, right?
Yeah.
So when he could stop doing it, he did. And you see what happens to those people and now he's back in. And there's just something about, to me, that's that Brené Brown being in the arena thing. It's like, are you going to iterate in public? If you're not, are you going to be willing to bomb sometimes? And I think, yeah. It does mean that you might not ever be the Radiohead or the Eddie Murphy or whatever. You might, if you're going to stay in the mess, you might never going to be seen as, I'm actually so, I hate that we have these perfect bands or perfect heroes or whatever, because I feel like they set unrealistic expectations. And there's a lot of luck involved. There's all these things. And yet I think so many of us want to be that.
Yeah.
And it keeps us from doing stuff. And I love what you said about the daily project thing of just like the goal is to ship it. And I went through a very similar thing and just realizing like, first of all, that stuff gets buried on the internet. Like your worst stuff, like if you just do it over time, like nobody, and they can if they want, but nobody's going back to the start of my Instagram.
Yeah.
If you want to, go ahead. It's your
I encourage time. People to go to the beginning of my Instagram. You'll see how different and how crappy my work is.
Yeah. You can swear. I don't know if that was censored or not. You can swear if you want to. But
you can swear if you want to.
Yeah. You can. I can't make a parody. Come on.
That's okay. I have a point.
Go.
Okay.
Let me hear it. Sorry. I went on a sidebar.
It's not an interruption, but that idea of having one thing that I kept in mind or didn't keep in mind was the goal that I really had. I just said I really left it open-ended. Mm. And I think that was another key point to it is like, if you don't have a specific goal in mind, you can never hit that ceiling.
Right.
And you can't, and you're saying yes to things that you're like, all right, well, let me try that, I guess. Yeah. Well, that opportunity is coming my way, I guess. A lot of people, you know, when you have a specific goal, if something, this opportunity comes in, you might say no because it doesn't go in that direction.
100%.
That is why, you know, that's the foundation of what I've done.
Unpack that more, because I think there's a ton of good stuff to talk about.
Well, I started in calligraphy,
mm-hmm.
putting my calligraphy out there. And now I'm in 3D lettering / illustration.
Yeah.
And for that to happen in 5 years, it's a lot of saying yes to feelings and opportunities and just kind of following my heart while also following external opportunities.
Yes.
At the same time. So I just love what I do. I loved what I did back then.
Yeah.
I love what I do now.
You're staying on the pulse.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think if I had said I know I could have done a lot with the calligraphy. Yeah. I know that, I mean, Instagram loves calligraphy.
Yes.
But it's not just about Instagram. It's like, I could have sold courses. I could have sold products. There are lots of ways that
you can make money doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just had a feeling like that my passion was more in something else, and that calligraphy was just the foundation of that. Yeah. And calligraphy is the foundation of all my lettering, but you won't see me, like, that's not the finished product anymore.
Yep. And that's iterating as you go, pivoting as you're understanding more truly. Once hopefully, I feel like, you know, one of the things, if I talk to a young person about their future or whatever, one of the things I'll say is like, you can't possibly know the job that you're perfect for. The only way you do it is you get in the mix and you use that radar that you're talking about with the North Star of what you love and what you're excited about. You pick a path that this kind of looks like it, but you get further on the path, you get a new vantage point. Now you're like, oh, actually this tributary of the path is maybe closer to that thing. You know what I mean? Like at first, maybe you only knew about calligraphy. You're like, this is close to the thing. And you get deeper in there. You're like, oh, there's actually this, fork in the road towards lettering, and you kind of make it up. But I feel like one of the things that I find really interesting about what you're talking about is you may know this, I'm really anti-dualism and binary thinking. I hate this idea that it's either every creative project needs to be about a goal or it needs to be no goal. And mm-hmm. I like to think about, I feel like strategy is almost the antithesis of creativity, which is weird because I'm the creative strategy guy. Mm-hmm. But strategy is start with an end in mind. Creativity is start and you don't know where it's going, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, think about the projects that start with limitation that you just, like, you get so, you can't even believe the ideas that are coming out of you, but they come from limitation. So I just see it as that, you know, it's the combination of limitation and creation.
Yes. Are you a fan of The Weeknd?
I am not.
You don't have to
I was just trying to think who they were.
So Canadian.
Is it a band?
Canadian one person R&B guy.
It's confusing that it's not his name.
I know. I mean, The Weeknd doesn't sound like a person. But my brother's really obsessed with him. I introduced him to him, so whatever.
He stole it.
He did. But he's obsessed, and he sent me recently these two videos of him doing live performances on Colbert and I think another one of them. And he's like making a music video in real time. It's also clearly not live. But he's doing something really different, like making his music video on live TV. And I think that was a constraint because he's not good at singing live. Mm-hmm. And I could be wrong, man, I've really worked myself into a corner here saying that about him. But he said, well, I know this. I know he had been like really nervous about singing live for a long time, to where he didn't do any performances for years into like huge hits. And that ended up becoming a constraint that he made a creative decision on. He created this new way of being on live TV that nobody else was doing. And so it's interesting that this weakness was able to become a strength because of that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Simple.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to this thing of iterating publicly and getting through. Even now, you're making breakthroughs about, because you're going to conferences and doing all the stuff that you've told me, I think, makes you uncomfortable, right?
Leaving the house.
Yeah. Can you just, you know, and just speak to it however, whatever degree you want to. But honestly, I work with a lot of creative people, and these are real things that lots and lots of people are going through. Are there little tricks that you've picked up through counseling or therapy? Are there little things that have helped you? Anything that you can pass on? Because I see so many creative people petrified of putting themselves out there. And you've done so much, especially recently. I'm just curious if there's any tips or tricks.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that it kind of goes back to what you were saying about so many creatives being anxious, and if that is a new thing. And I think it is absolutely just there's a light shone on it. You know, like, I'm so glad.
A revelation.
I think so many people are realizing that, you know, there's just a lot more education out there. There's a lot more information. And so people are realizing where they're at. And so anxiety's always existed, but now we're realizing it. I didn't know of anxiety, the true definition of it, until 10 years ago. And I think it's hilarious because I've always been so anxious.
What is the
true
like, definition?
I mean, it's just me embodied.
It's a photo of you.
Like, I had no idea what it I thought an anxious person was just constantly, like, shaking. I don't know what. It's almost hard to think about what I used to think anxiety was, but I wasn't that. Mm-hmm. I thought I wasn't that. And I'm the epitome.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny because a lot of anxious people will have, like, deadpan face. They will not show anything. You know, I used to, my best friends would not know if I was joking because I would just always have the same face.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because I didn't want to show, I didn't want to emote. I didn't want anyone to see me crack. I didn't want, you know, we get really good at hiding our feelings. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the most anxious people you'll notice, like, look super confident in groups or or just, like, you might think that they don't really have much feeling behind that face, but they really do. They have too many feelings.
Yeah.
So that is part of it. And I think, you know, I've certainly gotten a lot of therapy, done a lot of counseling, I've done a lot. And a lot of it really comes down to asking for help and not feeling ashamed of that. I used to say, oh, I have this team to just, you know, help me survive. And I've walked around with shame about that. Like, oh, because I need a psychiatrist, because I need a therapist, because I need friends, because I need support friends, that means that somehow I'm failing. Mm. But I had the strength to ask for help.
Yeah.
And I know I could be a lot worse. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't ask for help. And I think that that's just a common theme with everything. If you want to move ahead, if you want to become better, if you want to be a better person, you want to be a better artist, you want to be a better partner, you need help. And that is, I think that's the cornerstone of walking through this fear.
That's a hard truth for me. I don't want help. I heard Dax Shepard say, I don't listen to that all the time. I don't always feel it. Do you ever feel like when you reference something, you have to put a qualifier? And not for any, I don't have anything wrong with them or anything. It's just, it's not part of my identity, his podcast. But he talked about how, I heard him once say how he, in his family, he was raised by a single mom. And to love her would be to not need help from her, because she was already, so much was taken from her. And so to show love was to be, like, self-sufficient. And that Kristen Bell, his wife, was the opposite, where they, by helping each other. That's how they showed that they loved each other. And my wife and I are pretty much identical to that, to where in my family, like if you're needing help, you're encroaching on other people's, you know, individual whatever prerogatives and stuff they're doing. Like it's, and so to me, yeah, there's, and I think a lot of people have that. Like a lot of people have that. There's no strength. You're, it's pure weakness to reach out for help and to need help. And I think it goes back to this. I wanted to touch on this external affirmation thing. You know, this whole thing of like, don't chase likes, don't chase followers, all that stuff. There's tons of merit to that. There's lots of truth in that. And I do think there's a weird non-dual balance that you have to strike here, because I think that we are social animals who do need external affirmation. It's part of our wiring. We need to matter to the tribe in some way, even in small ways. And the same goes for that. We're also social animals to where we're built to collaborate and need help. We're built as, I heard someone say this recently, I don't know where it was, but we're built to be only one part of the body, because it requires all of these people to come together to get everything done. And it's not a weakness. It's you're fulfilling your purpose if you're in collaboration with other people.
Yeah.
Did I make any sense?
Yeah.
Just totally. Affirm me externally, please.
Yeah, I think it's something that is in our makeup, you know? I mean, it makes sense. We needed it to survive, just to stay in groups. Like the unlikable would, you know, they would be cast out, and yeah, then they probably wouldn't survive. I have been watching Meerkat Manor.
Uh-huh. And, I used to watch that. Yeah. I forgot about Meerkat.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many parallels, you know. Just, I felt I would just be crying for the meerkat that was, you know,
ostracized.
Ostracized. And it's like we do need to feel like we belong, and we're constantly trying to balance that. Social media makes it a little harder, you know, because you can just get so drunk off of likes. You can
totally.
You can survive like that for a really long time.
Yep.
And, you know, that you asked, you know, how I've gotten through, and I had to get sober in order to get better with my anxiety, and that was 10 years ago.
Thank you for sharing this, first of all. I don't think I knew that. Maybe you mentioned it to me once before, but anyway, continue. Sorry.
Yeah, it's just something that I felt like maybe clients wouldn't then, you know, I had some inner turmoil about whether or not I wanted to be open with that, but I think that it's important, because I really want to prove that, like, I would love someone to disclose that. Yes. You know, I would love to hear that more sober artists are out there. So I'm coming out. Yes. Another closet. How many closets do you have?
That's amazing.
But yeah, so sobriety.
You know, that's within a closet.
Yes. That's closets, amazing. Closets, closets.
It's closets all the way down. That's amazing.
So yeah, I needed a lot of help, you know, you need a lot of help. So I was, you know, you can survive for a really long time using external sources to survive.
Yeah.
You can do that for a really long time until it doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that people can just ride that like and follower wave for years.
Yeah.
But there is always a crash and a burn.
Yep, because they change the algorithm.
And it's
it's true, and your fix is gone. Right. Like, yeah. What used to work doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. I think, yeah, and that's what the algorithm really did, was make a lot of people aware of just how much they had been counting on that. It wasn't just like, oh, like I noticed a, you know, a difference in the way that people were engaging. But what I really saw from most people complaining about it was how much they didn't realize that they needed that for their survival.
Yeah. Yes. I think for me personally, it's not so much that I need it for, like, I need it versus somebody else, but when they change something and all of a sudden the achiever part of me that says, I'm not better than I was, because all of a sudden, oh, this thing got less than that thing. And it does, it gets in your head. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm attributing. This is an unhealthy amount of affirmation or self-esteem that I'm attributing it to this thing. Do you see parallels with getting sober to, have there been things in that process that have been direct parallels to growing your art career?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hard to separate it from me transitioning my gender as well. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like I came out, I got sober. Then I needed, you know, to just learn how to live and have like some sort of foundation of just living.
Yeah.
And then I realized all this. Like I had to get sober to realize all these things about myself. Mm. And I didn't realize that I was a man until 5 years into sobriety. So, so then I realized that I wanted to transition. I realized that I wanted to be an artist. I realized that I wanted to work in 3D all the same year. What? And it was just like this big opening up, like, you know,
yes.
And it's been such a ride from that. Just saying like, let me just try this and let me just try that. And I guess I'll go with this feeling. And I guess this is me now, you know. It was just, it's so interesting how they all paralleled each other so directly.
I love that. I talk about how, you know, a big part of the work of the artist is to use art as self-expression, but also self-excavation. And that it's your job as the artist, if you're spending all this time making and reflecting, is to be a leader, really, in culture, because you are doing this deep inner work, and your art can only go as far as your personal development. And so if your art is stuck, maybe you need some personal breakthroughs. Maybe you need to develop some of that. And it sounds like that is exactly what happened for you.
Yeah, totally. And sometimes I feel like my life and my art are sometimes separate, but there's no separating them. You know, like as much as you want to not put yourself in your art just because of like whatever you know, sometimes we can go for what we think is, you know, more salable, what's more marketable, you know, that whole, that spectrum of, you know, am I doing this for external reasons or internal reasons? And, but I think that my art, I've realized that my art is an escape. It's like a fun, it's like what I wish the world was.
Yeah.
Just like, I wish I could step out of the house and that was, my art is what I wanted to step into.
It's like a creator. You're creating a world. Mm-hmm. Yes, I feel you. I'm totally all down for that.
Yeah, because I thought, oh, well, my art needs to be dark and it needs to match my mind, but it doesn't, you know, that's how some people's art manifests because when they have this type of personality.
True.
When they have these dark, stormy nights going on in their head. Mine just happens to manifest in a different way. Mm. And that's what makes, makes it all so different.
I love that. I also, it reminds me of what Gary Shandling says, which is, he said, rest in peace, but give what you didn't get. And I love that idea of like, creating your own universe. Like it's not, I think you're too, and I like, there's a bunch of nuance that you're bringing to these ideas of how you express yourself. It's still as just a pure expression to say, this is what I wish I could step into as it is, this is where I'm at.
Yeah.
They're both authentically deep within you. They're manifestations of that. But I find actually that golden rule idea of, you do unto others through your art of wish, or what you wish was done for you. To me, that has been my guiding light of how do I get, like we're doing this, I was going to segue at some point, we're doing this agency, Co-Loop, in which you are part of the roster. And there's a little part of me, as we're getting all this work in, there was a little tiny part of me at the beginning that got bitter because I was like, why didn't I have this? Or I'm starting a podcast network and I'm like, why didn't some podcast network pick me up?
Yeah.
Like, why am I making it easier for all these people? And I realized, like, that's my purpose. Mm-hmm. My purpose is to be the podcast network that I wish that I was on. Someone who can get source all these sponsors and do all this so they don't have to learn the hard way like I did. The only reason I can do that for them is because I learned the hard way, is because I have the sensitivity of knowing what I wish I needed or what I needed. And it sounds exactly like you making these worlds that you could step into and escape into. Like, that taste and sensitivity is palatable, not just to you, but all the other people that need the same thing.
And, you know, it's so funny that you say that. I think a lot of us have that bitter part of ourselves, you know, some people it's better, bigger than others, that is just so stuck on that, the past. And, you know, well, this was really hard for me. And I absolutely step into that. I mean, that is part of my anxiety.
Sure.
You know, I'm not going to say that I don't have any selfish thoughts.
Yeah, I do.
Because, it really is hard to think. It's hard to think about, I mean, that's absolutely necessary to create something new.
Yeah.
Is that it's going to be uncharted territory. But it is like, why didn't I have this? Like, I just need it. But that's why it's so necessary. It's like, why don't I hear from, you know, why are there no other trans 3D artists? Well, I have to come out.
You got
to
do it.
Yeah, I have to come out. Maybe more will follow. Maybe more are out there already, you know, just haven't said, hey, you know, it sucks to be the first. It just is really hard. It's uncomfortable to be a pioneer.
Yes.
But it's necessary. You know, otherwise, I think I'd be really bored if I wasn't a pioneer of some sort.
Absolutely. And in fact, I would argue that mythology would say, it's not until that moment that you become the hero that you're supposed to be. Like, that, I always use the same damn example, but it's that part where
is it Luke, Zelda?
No. Close. Damn it. I wish it was Zelda now. It's when Luke says no to Yoda. Mm-hmm. And there's this part where I'm all about representation is so huge to me. You wouldn't think it was because I'm in many ways highly represented. But there's little ways that like people with ADHD not coming forward and talking about it. And it's a bitch. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it is a superpower in some ways, but it really sucks in a whole bunch of other ways. And I didn't, for the same reason as you talking about, what was it? I don't know if you were saying anxiety. One of these things you were talking about where you were afraid for, sobriety, I think it was, of you're afraid of what clients might think. And for the longest time, that's why I didn't want to talk about ADHD, because they're procrastinators and they're, you know, they miss deadlines, all kinds of stuff. And although that might not be the case for me, it is in some ways, but that whole thing of, I think you got to look for representation, and until you can't find it, be it.
Yeah,
I think there's that, and that's where you're stepping into your own journey. It was true for me. I needed to find people like me to raise that ceiling and those limits off.
Yeah.
But at some point, there's not going to be anybody representing what you need to see, and you need to do that for those who do.
Yeah, and you know, and it's not like everyone needs to come out of closets, but like, I think that there was a long time that you were not talking about your ADHD,
very true.
You were establishing yourself. There was a long time I was not talking about these very vulnerable subjects about myself, where I want people to judge the art first. That's just how I've been.
Yes.
I just want you to judge the art first, because then when I tell you what's really up, you'll be like, wow, that's cool that you can do that and be dealing with all these other things.
1,000,000% agree. The way I think about that is, you've got to, I think about this all the time, you know, find the crowd you want to be a part of, show them that you can hang, fit in to the market, show them like, I'm one of these people. Like, you hear a comedian say, I just want to be one of those people. Go do it. Be legit in that way. And then then you're going to hit another ceiling. Now all you're doing is you're fitting in.
Yeah.
You're not, and you're stuck there. And until you're ready to step the next chasm of not just fitting in, but standing out. Because when there was a bunch of places, but one of them was creating this podcast. There was no career podcast in creativity, at least in my neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to be talking about marketing. I'm going to be talking about a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm going to be talking about it through the lens of I'm almost going to be in tears because I'm so passionate about it. Yeah. I'm going to be ostracized because I've gotten this far with fitting in and pretending like I'm part of the gang. And I'm going to show everybody actually I'm not. You know what I mean?
So you thought that when you came – that when you started the
you
podcast –
You can say came out with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you stopped yourself.
Yeah, I'm wondering if well, that you really felt like you were going to be judged harshly or, you know, you've been kind of acting in a role.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, when I started the podcast, I thought – I just knew – and this is what I think it's a big deal. It's like – I knew that my heroes would not like it. Now, they might not know about it, but like the people that I was looking up to from, you know, early 2000s illustrators and designers that are my biggest creative heroes, I knew if they knew about this podcast, based on everything I know about them, they would be like, like loser, lame, like, you know what I mean? Like you can't put career and creativity in the same thing. I just knew, like if they... The same goes for calling myself Andy J. Pizza. I know my creative heroes from before would be like, that's stupid. And I think, but it's those little decisions that you're willing to be like, yeah, they would say that. And I don't. I like this. All right. You know what I mean? That's where you start stepping out into your own thing.
Yeah. You almost get a sense of, I mean, a lot of the loudest people are the most critical.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
So you're hearing a lot of, oh, that's not cool. I mean, like, why aren't they just an artist to be an artist? Why are they going to mix career and, you know, why do they want to make money?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Dirty, dirty money. Why do they want to survive in this
world?
Why do
they want to feed their children? What's so lame to do that?
It's so funny that you say that. I mean, so were you pleasantly surprised when you did start it?
Yeah, I mean, I think also I went through, don't turn the tables on me, Noah. I know I'm not going to let you do it, but
Did I tell you I was a therapist for just
really?
A little
bit? Yeah. Please, I need
I wasn't
to go
a therapist,
to therapy.
I was a counselor. Yeah, I was a substance abuse counselor for 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I liked running groups.
Okay.
Yeah. But then I did the art thing. I liked that more.
That's awesome. I'm not going to go way into that, but I was surprised. It's not like I thought this isn't going to do me any good. I wanted to help people. And I also wanted to get booked doing talks because I felt like that was my thing. Mm-hmm. I did a talk and it just changed my life. I found my way into it in a way that I hadn't. And I was like, I've got to figure out how to show people I can do this because nobody's asking me to do it. And that's why I started the podcast. And I just figured, it's going to be divisive. Some people are going to hate it and some people are going to like it. But I didn't think anybody would like it to the level that whatever it is now, I didn't see any of that coming.
It's quite successful.
Well, it's something. It's hard to say, isn't it? But
I'm doing two thumbs up.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But let's go to – I wanted to ask you about – let's talk about Koloop for a minute. There's a few metrics that we thought about of who we wanted to bring on. One of them was about having a sense of their voice, not just about how to say stuff like nice style, slick graphics, whatever, but having something to say. Another big part of it is it's collaborative. It's, rising tide raises all ships, that kind of mentality. And so this whole team thing, needing help, all of that goes into the types of relationships we want to build. Is that – I know you've worked a little bit with Ryan already. I'm just interested how that hits you.
Yeah, I love that Ryan is someone that has been kind of like a coach, you know.
Yes.
And he's not just an agent. He's a coach. And I've belong to a couple of mastermind groups. They've been life-changing, you know.
Yeah.
I have talked with peers like more than I ever wanted to because I was terrified to reach out to them, and they would help me so much. I know that, again, I have seen it as a parallel to sobriety where, you know, you need help in order to get over these blocks.
Yes.
You know, you always hit that block and you're not going to know the answer. You're just not going to know yourself. You can't come up with it in your own brain. You need to go outside of your brain. And that's why I love the idea of Koloop. So when I first heard about it, I was like, yes. And then I was immediately terrified.
Yeah.
You know, because that's me.
Right. Very on brand.
So that's when I know something's right.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Talk about, like, you know, see fear as it's not always the thing that means turn around. Sometimes it's the thing that means, like, dig in. And I freaking love what you just said about, for me, the vision and the heart, because I'm not an agent. Why am I starting an agency with Ryan, who is an agent? And for me, it's because I feel like it's a phase two to Creative Pep Talk, because Creative Pep Talk is all about empowering individuals to empower themselves. Like, mm-hmm. do everything you can on your own without anybody telling you you can do it, without any external affirmation, without any help from anybody. And I'm happy with what we've been able to do. And I've seen some really crazy things for creative people happen through it. But at some point, I felt like there's just a bunch of stuff you can't do without other people.
Yeah.
There's just so much more you can do if you do it together. And to me, it's like, yeah, we have this little roster, but then what this little roster can do in events and education and bringing other people and watching other other ships rise. Like, that's what it's all about to me, is like, how do we get these people together that all have this mentality and want to cross pollinate and help each other? Yeah. And so I'm just thrilled to have you. You're bringing something very different to the team that I think is amazing. And yeah, I'm glad you feel that way about it.
Yeah. Community over competition.
Boom. Yes.
Yeah. Everyone on the roster. So the one word that comes up with everyone is their generosity. Mm. That just comes from so much. You know, we were talking about that kind of scarcity mindset of like, why didn't I have this? You know, why can't I have this? And then it takes a lot of effort to think in abundance. And I don't want to just use like that kind of terminology that's a little trendy, but there's a mindset of abundance when you actually are not constantly thinking about how can I get, you know, how can I take a shortcut? What do I get out of this situation? Because that will naturally come. If you're generous, you know, the law of reciprocity.
Yeah.
I almost.
You did it great.
Thank you.
It's beautiful. I would have said reciprocities. But I completely agree. Generosity. I hadn't thought of that word, but it's totally true. And I love how you highlighted the scarcity mindset in me, because I do the podcast and what my heart is in this, but I have the same, it's not like it's all natural to me. Like, there's mm-hmm. certain parts of it. I have to recognize that bitterness and the cynicism and the scarcity. There's lots of times, honestly, there are some, you know, mini me pizzas out there. And I've just actively noticed it and thought, what's the most loving, productive thing I can do? Now, that doesn't always mean just enabling it. Like, that sometimes that's not super, you know what I mean? But how can I be generous in my spirit with that? And I like that you highlighted, like, you know, I do. I have that. I get that bitterness. And I'm glad that obviously all of us have it. It almost takes a core value of, you know, making like, okay, I know of human nature is to go there. I'm going to go the other way.
Yeah. And that really reminds me of what I used to think and sometimes go back to, which is that generosity isn't just something that someone is born with. Yes. I used to look at these people and say, well, they're just better than I am. They are able to give them of themselves more. That comes natural to them, as if they don't have any challenges with that. But that is assuming, it's dismissing the hard work that they've put in when we do that. And I just like to do that to separate myself so that I can stay comfortable. I mean, a lot of these mind tricks are just so we can stay comfortable, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to look at them. I'm totally different. So therefore I won't go there. I won't do this thing that is so scary to me. But to be reminded that we all struggle with that, that it's that we all get over these blocks where we're really scared of doing something and it doesn't just come naturally. I always have to be reminded of that, because every day I wake up, I'm the same amount of scared that I was the day before. I mean, arguably I've improved.
Sure. So that's just funny. But I think that's a fantastic point, because I think There's something about, I don't know if it's because like A Star Is Born or Bohemian Rhapsody or whatever, but they show these people that it's just ease. It's just a, it's not that they don't have things to overcome, but they, but the art is just flowing and it's just there. And I'm not saying there's some good, I think, yeah, you need to find your talent spots and you need to get into those real nice grooves and stuff. But knowing that, yeah, this thing's just obstacles. It's just like, and when you're feeling those fears and obstacles, be like, those are the booby traps. That means the treasure's still there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a difference between a successful artist and an unsuccessful artist. And the successful one took the obstacles and they just kept going instead of stopping. That's pretty much the only difference.
100%. The amount of creative things I've had to do to get over obstacles. Some of my most creative acts have been like, well, they won't let me in there. So I've got to figure out some weird way around. Like the Indie Rock Coloring Book was that, where I was like, they didn't make gig posters in England at the time. I could not find any screen. Mm-hmm. Every time I talk to a screen printer and I'm like, I want to make a poster, like, why? It's for shirts. You don't screen print on paper, you idiot. Like, I could not get it.
That's so funny.
And so I had to make the coloring book. It was just a weird way around. Like, I want to work with these artists. Like, how do I do it? You know? All right. Last question. Do you have any just go-to favorite tactic or value or mindset or quote, whatever? What's the one of the staples of something? It might be just something you come back to, or a core tactical practice for your career. Is there anything that comes to mind for that?
Well, I think it goes back to what I've been talking about. So yeah. It's just going to sound a little repetitive.
That's fine. We need a reminder.
Walk through the fear. Mm. Go through it, not around it.
Absolutely. I freaking love that. Thank you. Hey, thanks for showing up here, walking through the fear, being in this room.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks
for terrifying me.
On that note, thanks. Huge, huge thanks to Noah for coming and telling your story. So brave and inspiring, and I am just grateful to be able to be a fly in the wall. I've got to watch your career blossom over the past couple of years, and it has just been ultra inspiring to see the places that your work has gone. Go check Noah's work out on Instagram at Noah Camp Design. It is incredible. And me and Noah are doing a collaboration right now. When I saw what he was doing with my characters in 3D, I freaked out. I showed every one of my kids. I showed my wife. I showed Ryan. I was like, can you believe this? It's amazing. I never felt 3D could feel so organic and like alive. I love it. Amazing stuff. Go check it out. Noah Camp Design on Instagram. Thanks again, Noah. Huge thanks to Ryan Appleton for helping me do the intro and all the help with the podcast every week. Thanks to Yoni Wolf in the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Alex Sugg for our soundtrack. And thanks to Jordan Aaron for editing this show so beautifully. Love having you on board, man. Thanks a lot. Thanks to all of you for showing up every week. And until we speak again, stay pepped up. Oh yeah, one more thing real quick. We're doing our Creative Elixir series, and part two should be coming next week. And I'm really excited about it. Thanks for all the feedback on part one. I'm glad it was hitting home. All that stuff was really close to my heart. And I took a bet on doing that content, and I'm glad that it paid off. And until we speak again, stay pepped up.